At the far end of the apartment, a row of shutters opened onto a balcony overlooking the swayback roofs of Shanghai. Beyond the low buildings and down a crooked street, the Wangpu River shushed against the wharves. A heavy, velvet humidity pressed down on this dark belt of water, a perpetual tension that caused a wilted draft, lifting fumes of jasmine and sewage, coal and rotting riverweed, into the thick night air. Inside, the small living room was crowded with a dozen overheated journalists and revolutionaries, as well as the usual assortment of eccentrics that congregated at parties in Shanghai in 1925. A Persian opera singer, a white Russian baroness, and a gunrunner of indeterminate nationality. There was a priest, bright-eyed on cocaine he had ordered from the room service menu at the Astor House. And Irene Bloom recognized the Italian fascist she had seen the night before, parading through the Del Monte with a tiger on a leather leash. Shanghailanders never needed an excuse to gather, but tonight they had one. The return of Roger and Simone Merlin from France, where the couple had gone to raise funds for China's Communist Party. The Merlins were late, and a restlessness that matched Irene's stirred among the guests. She overheard the Italian fascist complain, "Bloody hot," prompting the Persian opera singer to declare, "Desperate weather. Did you hear about the Argentine ballerina caught stealing spices in the Chinese market? She wears only Coco Chanel. Every time the peddler turned his back, she dropped another pinch of saffron into her pocket. She swears she doesn't know why she did it. Insists the heat must have addled her brain." Irene understood. It was unsettling, the way the heat subverted. She had been in Shanghai only 1 week, but already, each day around the noon hour, when the sun was high and the city lay exposed, she found herself envisioning the most uncharacteristic acts. Stabbing a rickshaw driver with her penknife, or shoving one of the demure chambermaids down the back stairs of her hotel. Of course, she did not act upon these impulses, but their eruption harassed her and caused a heat-stricken feeling of agitation that had reached a new level of intensity tonight. She had not expected to have to wait a week to meet Simone Merlin, and she was wound tight with anticipation. She could not stop watching the door. Unable to concentrate on conversation, she slipped out to the balcony, where she leaned against the railing, plucking the fabric of her dress away from her skin, seeking relief from the muggy room. She was soon joined by Anne Howard. Anne had arranged the party so Irene could meet Simone, and yet she now said, "It's not too late to change your mind." "Why are you so against this?" Irene asked. "Darling, I'm looking out for you, that's all. This is bigger than anything you've been involved with before. It's not a jaunt to Phoenix to find out if you can detect a forged..."
"I did detect it. And I saved Mr. Sims a great deal of money on that statue. Not to mention the humiliation of being duped by a greasy con man from Arizona."
"I know you did. You're good at what you do. I'm not denying that. But if the wrong person gets wind of this, if anyone finds out what you're searching for, and the jungles, Irene, you don't seem to realize what a different league you're in with this expedition."
"I'm in the same league I've been in for years."
Irene scowled at the woman she thought she knew so well.